Although it's a really good question, my ideal frequency, it doesn't really matter if whether or not we're looking at volume and intensity as much as it does the specific goal and the specific person. So there's a few scenarios here to kind of consider. And for context, the reason we would want to turn the dial of intensity down if we are turning volume up is because those two can't coincide, and still we can't expect to optimize recovery if those are both really high. Welcome to the Tailored Life Podcast. Today's a Q&A, guys. I'm very excited about this one. We haven't done a Q&A, I feel like, in a little bit. It's been at least a couple weeks, if not more, where I've just gone through a bunch of different questions. I'm going to do like a rapid fire style podcast today and crank through as many questions on fitness and nutrition as I can. If you are a return listener, first and foremost, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to my voice repetitively. I don't know how you do it. But I'm appreciative of it. I'm glad that I am providing enough value to the fact that you want to listen once again. So thank you for that. No matter who you are, where you're at, I appreciate you listening more than you know. If you're new to the show, thank you for being here for your first time. Just so you are aware, this is the one and only fitness and nutrition podcast that I would say goes beyond my scope of practice. And I say that because when you're in school learning to become a personal trainer, they always tell you, don't talk about anything outside of training and nutrition. That's out of your scope of practice. Screw that. I want to help people. I'm here to make people better. I'm here to help average people achieve above average things, live above average lives, and do it all in an above average physique. So you're going to hear everything and anything that makes you better as a human being. We're going to talk on fitness, nutrition, supplementation, fat loss, muscle growth, but also personal development, journaling, meditation, family, relationships, business, life. Again, anything and everything that makes you better as a human, we are going to talk about on this show. So welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Tailored Life. I'm excited for you to be here. In fact, knowing what I just said, I want to kind of go on a brief little tangent because I think it's relevant. I think that, you know, sometimes I say things that make me want to dive into random tangents. And this is one of them. Before we get into the questions, I am going to I want to give you a thought-provoking insight or lesson. It's a quote, something I heard from an individual that is extremely powerful. And that quote is that there are three type of reactions an individual makes. And I may have said this on the podcast before, but there's three type of reactions that an individual makes when they are around greatness. And you could be around greatness in so many different ways. It could be somebody who's more successful than you financially. They could have a better family dynamic. They could have a healthier relationship, a healthier body, a better physique, stronger than you, leaner than you, whatever it may be. They have something that is better than you. They have something that you desire. They have a level of success that you feel inadequate to. And there's three type of reactions an individual has when they are in the presence of that type of greatness or success. And those reactions are envy and jealousy, intimidation, and inspiration. Now, there's two of those that are very negative. Envy and intimidation. Intimidation isn't as negative as envy. However, it is negative in the sense that it's going to limit your growth. It's going to stop you from moving forward. The reason I'm talking about this is because as average individuals, we need to put ourselves around people who are either A, above average in every way, shape, or form so we can observe what they do, how they do it, and the way they operate so that we can get better, or they're individuals who were like us, they were average and now they are not because of those things, because of the same thing that I'm encouraging you to do, which is get around above average people, doing above average things. Now, if you are envious around greatness, it means that you're jealous. It means that you're sour. It means that you're bitter. It means that you are so negative about somebody else's success that you will block and shield any lesson or insight that you could potentially pull from that individual to make yourself better. And that is the worst thing you could do to yourself. That is literally stunting your growth in every way, shape, or form. Do not be that person. If you find yourself being envious or jealous, you need to put up a red flag and stop yourself immediately. And this is really common. We're humans, so we're going to have feelings like this. We're going to judge. That's what we do. We are humans. It's normal. So don't feel bad about it. Be aware of it. Awareness precedes change. So next time you are around somebody who is more successful than you or better than you or has something you don't, or are seeing them interact with their spouse or with their kids in a way that you can't do, yet. I want you to stop. And I want you to think about the envy that you're feeling, the jealousy that you're feeling. And I want you to nip it in the butt and change what you're doing immediately. That is a moment where you need to stop. You need to reflect on the feeling you're having and ask yourself why you are having that. Most likely the reason you are being envious or jealous is actually because you see them doing something or having something that you don't have. And because you feel inadequate, incapable, you're doubting your own ability to achieve that thing, or you're too afraid to take action because there's sacrifice that is required before you can step forward and do the thing, you begin to create this resentment in the form of envy and jealousy. And in your mind, it kind of puts a blanket over the feeling. It puts a blanket over the root cause of that feeling, more than likely. And it kind of gives you the, the okay. Like at that point, you're like, it's okay for me to feel this way. That's what you're doing. It's a Band-Aid. That is not okay. You need to nip that in the bud. The second emotion is intimidation. Intimidation is very similar. This second emotion of intimidation is similar in the sense that it's going to prevent you from growing, but it's not as negative as envy because you're not bitter towards them. You're just creating more doubt towards yourself. In fact, it's more negative from a self-talk perspective than an outward talk perspective. I would actually go out to say that the person who is more envious is usually the person who is less introverted. They're more extroverted because they're okay projecting their judgments onto the individual to make themselves feel better. Whereas the person that's intimidated is usually quiet and introverted. They are going to put that judgment right back on themselves. And now they're in a position where they're making themselves feel inadequate. They're talking, for lack of better terms, they're talking shit to themselves in their own mind, which creates a negative condensation and belief or story in their mind about themselves and what they can achieve. And that stops them from growing too. They can't take action because they don't believe in themselves, but it's because they're intimidated by the person who has accomplished what they desire. And then the third one is inspired. The person that is inspired is the person that is going to grow, is the person that's going to project positivity and energy that is helpful to the person that just won. And that person who won or is successful or is better than you is probably going to help you in some way. They're going to feel more inspiration in you because they feel that inspiration from you. This is really, really important. When we have a moment of inspiration from somebody else's success, it creates an internal drive of self-belief. And it's very much so like a karmic loop, right? What we put out comes back, right? And so you're going to receive more energy from the person that's successful because you're giving them energy. You're hyping them up. You're fueling them. Your inspiration drives them to do more. And when they do more, they give back to those who fueled them to do more. So this is a really, really important concept. And I want to talk about this just because of the way I did the intro. This is totally unplanned and candid, to be honest with you. But it's really important. I put it on my Instagram story today. And if you're not following me, at Cody McBroom on Instagram, I typically do little things like this on my Instagram story every morning, just some kind of write-up to just give some more extra value and in any way, shape, or form that I can to just provide lessons, things I write in my journal, things I hear in a podcast or through a mentor call of myself and my mentor who coaches me. So the reason I really wanted to share this, though, is because there's going to be a lot of you listening to this. It might be you listening to this who constantly feels that envy or constantly feels intimidated, or maybe you don't always feel intimidated, but sometimes you do. Sometimes you're envious and other times you're inspired. This is normal. You're human. Really, really try to pick this apart. Dig deeper and think about this. Next time you feel inspired, why did you feel inspired? Was it because the person who accomplished something, the thing that they accomplished, maybe you could visually or realistically see yourself doing that? Maybe it wasn't so far-fetched in your mind. You could believe that you could accomplish that thing. It wasn't too crazy, right? Or next time you feel envy, was it because it's something that makes you uncomfortable? Maybe it's something that involves another person. So for example, this used to be me where I would see people who have relationships and they would have certain things with their kids or spouse, and I would get envious or intimidated because I'm like, man, I wish I had the courage to do that. And it wasn't because I didn't believe I had the capability. It was because it involved somebody else. I had to put myself out there in that way and then hope and pray that my wife or my daughter would receive that and reciprocate it. And if they didn't, I'd feel stupid. That's what it was. That created that like subconscious feeling, created this sense of intimidation or envy so that I wouldn't even go down the path. until I started thinking about this stuff and digging deeper and deeper and deeper, right? So again, I'm going to repeat this and then we're going to move on to the questions because this is supposed to be a training and nutrition podcast, but today's is at least. But as you can tell, I tend to veer off on different tangents. The overall theme here in the quote is pretty simple. There are three responses or reactions that individuals have when they are in the presence of greatness. And greatness can be defined as somebody who has more than you, has something better than you do, is more successful than you financially, spiritually, emotionally, relationally, any type of success that is greater than yours and is similar to what you desire. When you are in the presence of them, you're either going to be envious and jealous, intimidated, or inspired. If you are envious or intimidated, you are going to stop yourself from growing. If you're inspired, you're going to fuel their success and they're going to give back to you. But not only that, you're going to leave that situation with a level of inspiration that fuels self-belief and helps you actually start taking action on your goals because you can visually see yourself doing it just like they did. So don't be the person that's envious or intimidated. Be the person that's inspired by other people's success. Now, we're actually going to get into the questions. I hope that helped you. I hope that really, really dug deep. Somebody who I'm becoming friends with, we did an interview with. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. I think it was last week that it aired. Nick Surface, just such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to personal development. But he talks about it being an unlock. That is a big unlock. And what an unlock is imagine that there's a door and behind the door is a next chapter for you. It is a huge growth pattern for you. It's something that could potentially change your life. It's a piece of wisdom that could change the way you operate and the door's locked. That thing I just gave you, that quote and that lesson, that insight, that's the key that unlocks it. That's the unlock that opens the door and allows you to walk down the path that fuels your growth. Think about it like that. All right. So we're going to get to the first question. The first few questions are going to come straight out of our Discord channel. So if you're not in the Discord channel, you can join the Discord channel. This is the Tailored Life Discord. This is where we have members of the Tailored Trainer. We have members of our Tailored Coaching Method. We have people who have bought in Tailored Life Apparel who are listening to Tailored Life Podcast. If you are in the Tailored family, you're in the Tailored audience, you're in the Tailored army, the tribe, you can join this. There's going to be private sections that are just strictly for the paying members of our community, but this is for everybody. So if you're somebody who wants to get inside scoops on exclusive content, what's going on the back end with the app, new updates, new apparel drops, podcasts, the first opportunity to ask questions for the podcast, that's going to be the big one. So all these Q&As, we're going to get first dibs always to the people in the Discord channel. So every week we're going to ask in there. And if they overflow the Q&A, they're going to get first dibs every single week that we do a Q&A. So jump in there. It's really, really important that you get in there and you join the community so that you're updated. And very soon we're going to be doing some cool stuff that is going to give you back some things as well. So that link to the Discord channel is in the description of this podcast. So the first question is from Amanda Curd. Amanda asked, what is your ideal frequency, assuming volume and intensity is the same? What is your ideal frequency, assuming volume and intensity is the same? So when it comes to volume, intensity, and frequency, these are three dials of program design. And so what we want to do here is dial them to the right limit, I guess you could say, or you know, you're turning these dials to make sure that your volume, your intensity, and frequency are in the right place. Typically, if your volume dial is turned up really high, you're going to need to turn your intensity volume down. You're going to need to turn your intensity dial down if your volume dial is turned up. So when volume's high, intensity gets turned down. Frequency is always going to be in the middle or high. It kind of depends on the individual. And it can be low too. So there's three scenarios that we look at when we're looking at the frequency component. And the reality is that although it's a really good question, my ideal frequency, it doesn't really matter if whether or not we're looking at volume and intensity as much as it does the specific goal and the specific person. So there's a few scenarios here to kind of consider. And for context, the reason we would want to turn the dial of intensity down if we are turning volume up is because those two can't coincide and still we can't expect to optimize recovery if those are both really high. So And for everybody listening as well, understand that intensity right here is going to be the weight on the bar. It's the relative, you could say the relative percentage of your one rep max. So a lot of times people think intensity, we think of how hard you're going in the gym. But the reality is what we're actually talking about when we think of intensity is how much load's on the bar relative to your one rep max. So for example, if you're doing five reps with 85% of your one rep max versus five reps with 70% of your one rep max, the intensity of the five reps with 85% of your one rep max is higher. Actually, this is even better. A better example, three reps with 90% of your one rep max versus nine reps with 60% of your one rep max. So if you look at it, the three reps with 90%, your last rep is going to be really hard. You had 90% of your one rep max. You're going heavy, right? But the nine reps at 60%, your last rep is going to be really hard as well because you're only doing 60% of your one rep max. However, you're doing three times as many reps, right? One would look at those and go, they're equally intense because the higher rep set, you're going just as hard as the lower rep. You're just doing more reps versus more weight. And that's true, but it's not intense. That's like an intensification, but it's effort really. So when we look at the science, we look at program design, the key terms are going to be effort. So how hard you're going or how close to failure you're going on that last rep, whether it's nine at 60% of your one rep max or three at 90% of your one rep max, that's going to be your effort. That's your proximity to failure. That's where RIR, reps in reserve, and RPE, rate of perceived exertion, those scales come into play and tell you how hard to go and how close to get to failure on your last rep of any given set, no matter how heavy you're going or how many reps you're doing. But the intensity of the three rep set is going to be greater. The volume of the nine rep set is going to be greater. So we have one high volume set and one high intensity set because the weight being heavier means more intensity. The reps being higher typically means more volume, right? And I say typically because technically we go sets times reps times weight. So you would actually do like, let's say it's just one set. You do nine times whatever the weight you're lifting is, that's the total volume. But nonetheless, if we're doing three sets of nine versus three sets of three, the volume's higher on three sets of nine versus three sets of three, but the intensity's higher on the three sets of three because you're lifting a heavier weight. So with that being said, if we are lifting heavy all the time, that's going to be really taxing on our nervous system, on our joints, so on and so forth. If we are tendons, ligaments, stuff like that, if we are lifting with high volume, it's going to be fatiguing on our tendons and ligaments a little bit, but mainly fatiguing on our muscular system, not nearly as fatiguing on our joints or on our nervous system. Now that's all relative. Obviously you can push volume to a certain point where it is stressful on your joints because anything done repetition at high amounts is going to get taxing on your joints. However, the research shows there's a far greater injury risk potential with powerlifting and lifting super heavy than there is with bodybuilding. And the reason is typically because the load and the sheer force placed on the joints because of how heavy the weights are is going to be more, it's going to be a higher risk of injury with that kind of training. So with all that context provided, looking at this question, now what is my ideal frequency assuming volume and intensity is the same? If volume and intensity are the same, it means that we're doing a moderate volume, moderate intensity program. A good moderate volume and moderate intensity program would be a power building approach. This is something that I have in the Tailored Trainer app, actually. It's called the Power Builder, and there's a female program called She Strong. Really, really good programs, and they have this moderate amount of volume and intensity. They're 4 days a week, so an upper-lower split, which isn't super high volume, but it's not low volume. There is heavy compound lifts and you're working from, I believe, 7, 5, 3. So you're working lower. It's a linear approach. So each week your compound lifts do less reps. So your volume goes down and your intensity goes up. Cause as you go from 7 to 5 to 3, week 1, 2, and 3, you're going to be lifting heavier and heavier. So intensity is going up, volume's going down because reps are going down. And then our accessory and isolation work, all the exercises that follow the compound lift, those are going to be higher volume, higher reps. And so we have this blend of essentially high volume, high intensity, but really it's moderate because a high intensity program, you would be doing, you know, sets of three, maybe sets of 7, 5, 3 or whatever on your compound lifts. And then you're also going to be doing sets of 4 to 6 on your accessory. You're doing also heavy accessory work with lower reps, so on and so forth. So this is a good example of a moderate intensity. And I love this kind of training. I think power building approach with this moderate volume, moderate intensity is a great way to train the average person who wants to change their physique, but also cares about strength. They want to be strong. They want to move well. They want to get better at the primary lifts, be that the bench squat, deadlift, or the things like lunges, Bulgarian split squats. So more of like the functional, yet still semi-compound lifts that we do in these kind of programs. The ideal frequency for something like that is typically going to be twice a week. And what we look at with frequency, or what we mean by frequency, is how frequent you're either doing an exercise, movement pattern, or muscle group. So the frequency of an exercise would be how often am I doing a bench press. The frequency of a movement pattern, which is closely related, would be how often am I doing a horizontal press. A horizontal press is the exact, it is what the bench press is classified as from a movement perspective, right? Exercise perspective, it's bench press. Movement perspective, it's a horizontal pressing pattern. From a muscle perspective, it's the chest and a little bit of front delt, shoulder, and a little bit of triceps. Those are secondary muscles that we're working. But the primary muscle group that we're training in a bench press is the chest, the pecs. And therefore, the frequency of the muscle is the chest. Usually, if we're looking at strength, we're usually looking at frequency based on the movement pattern and the exercise, because strength is specific to skill. So you want to get better and stronger at the bench press. If you're trying to get better and stronger at the bench press, it means that you want a higher frequency typically. If you want to build more muscle, you're probably actually going to do less frequency, because you want to be able to create a large amount of stress and stimulus on the muscle. And it's very hard to create maximal mechanical tension without causing damage. When you cause damage to the muscle, you're going to have soreness. When you have soreness, you can't train the muscle very quickly. You got to wait at least a couple of days, right? And so if you're waiting 48 hours, let's say, if not 72 hours, you're not going to be able to hit the muscle more than twice a week. There's people who can get away with full body training for hypertrophy. I'm not a fan of it. I don't think that you can take the muscle far enough to failure. I don't think you can create enough mechanical tension or fatigue on a muscle in a given session to stimulate maximal muscle growth by doing full body. Because if you're doing full body sessions, you're just going to be doing a little bit. The caveat to that is if you're doing 3 days a week and that's all you have to train, then you're going to do the best you can. And typically you're going to do a full body program, or you're going to do like an upper lower full body. So one day's upper, one day's lower, one day's full. I'd probably go lower, upper, full. But point being, you have a little bit, a combination of both. And that's just what you can work with. Sometimes the best thing is whatever you can get done, right? However, anybody who wants to truly maximize muscle growth probably needs to train more than 3 days a week. If your goal is general body composition changes, mainly fat loss, muscle maintenance, 3 day weeks is fine. You can totally get away with that. That is not a problem, especially if your goal is fat loss. If your goal is strength, it's the same thing. The more specific the strength to less exercises. So for example, if you really just care about your deadlift and your bench press, then you could get away with 3 days a week too. But if you also want to build strength across all your exercises, you're going to probably need to train 4 days a week. Training more than 4 days a week for a strength focused goal is going to be difficult, because the recovery is more global. And what that means by global is you're going to have some muscle damage, but you're also going to have a lot of joint stress, central nervous system stress, things like that. You're going to require more recovery for those kind of sessions. And therefore, you're probably going to need more time between sessions, regardless of the muscle group you're training. And the frequency needs to be higher for each movement pattern to increase strength, because it's specific. And a good example of that is pretty simple. If you wanted to learn how to speak Spanish, would you speak Spanish once a week practice, or would you practice a little bit for every day, right? You'd probably practice a little bit every day. Or baseball. If you want to get really good at throwing a baseball, do you just throw a baseball once a day, or do you throw it every day? You know, as often as you can, because that's what's going to develop the skill, repetition. So with strength training, you're going to want to hit a 2 to 3 times a week frequency. You could do 4, but that's where if you're really training strength, you're going to probably damage some tissue, some ligaments, stuff like that. So 2 times a week is ideal. 3 times a week is ideal as well. It just depends on what you personally can recover from. For muscle growth, you're going to look at 2 times a week almost across the board. So the reason for this is pretty simple. Research shows that 2 times a week is probably going to be ideal. Some would argue that this is because they're sending an anabolic signal, right? Anabolic being growth, muscle protein synthesis, recovery of stress, recovery of tissue, sending amino acids and glucose to the cell, the tissue, so on and so forth, versus catabolic. So catabolic is breakdown, anabolic is growth. And some would argue that it's just a matter of managing fatigue and improving volume. Because if volume is not just the reps you get or the sets you get, but it's also how much weight you lift for those, again, total volume is going to be a matter of sets times reps times weight lifted. So if you do 3 times 10, that's 300, right? 3 times 10 with 100 pounds, that's 300 or whatever, right? You're multiplying it all. If we look at total tonnage, total volume is the point I'm getting at. I might have butchered the math there. We want to have as much as possible. If you're doing a chest day, for example, by the time you get to enough volume, because you got to do enough volume to grow, which is going to be somewhere between 10 to 20 sets. By the time you've done 10 sets on your chest is smoked. It's going to be very difficult. The most I can do in a single session is 15, and I'm really taxed out. And a lot of research shows that beyond 12, muscle protein synthesis starts to kind of taper down and drop off, which we don't want if we're trying to maximize growth. And so the point with this is simple. If we split up our training sessions into two training sessions for each muscle group, so we're hitting each muscle group twice a week, now we no longer have, one chest day with a load of volume to where our performance in the amount we can lift per set is really dropping off at the end of the week. We want to split into two because then we can basically have optimal performance to the point where we're really fatigued and we're going to start to see a decline, and we stop there and we do it again the next day. Because if we keep going, not only will we lift less weight and we'll have less total volume per week, but we'll also fatigue it more, cause more muscle damage. And then the next time we go to train, it's going to be hard to train it because we're going to be so fatigued. We probably won't be able to train until next week. So you can optimize your volume by splitting it into two. So most of the time I'm going to recommend frequencies of two, no matter what your goal is. You know, it's a really long-winded way of saying twice a week is probably optimal. The only time once a week is optimal, like a classic bro split where you're just doing once a week, is either A, if you're maintaining a muscle. So if you're in a cut, or if you're special, like let's say you can only train 4 days a week and you want to really focus on a couple muscle groups and you don't really care about growing the other muscle groups, then lower the frequency of the muscle groups you don't care about to once a week, and then increase the frequency of the ones you care about to 2 to 3 times a week so that you can train them more to get more volume per week. Your total volume per week across all muscle groups and exercises is going to be relatively the same as it was since you lowered the other ones and increased the ones you care about more. So your nervous system, your joints, everything like that is going to be fine. You're not going to overtrain, but you're going to optimize growth in those muscles that you care about most. And so twice a week is probably going to be best no matter what. If you want to maintain, do it once a week. And then of course, if you're on steroids, it's different too, because you're constantly sending a anabolic signal to the muscle, to the nervous system to grow. So you could train once a week, you could take it way further than the natural person, and you're going to recover from it and be able to do it again next week, no matter what, because you're taking steroids. But that's a completely different context. Okay. So very deep dive on that question. I hope that helped and answered it well. Hey, sorry to interrupt this podcast, but I briefly want to mention my company, Tailored Coaching Method. I founded Tailored Coaching Method in 2017 as a way to help people lose weight, build muscle, and transform their lives, because I began to see that every other area of people's lives started to change and get better and be more successful when they got in shape and they felt better in their skin. And since then, I've built an entire team of world-class coaches who help people around the world transform right before our eyes. And because you're listening to this podcast, I got to imagine you want to get in shape too, or you're already in shape and you're looking to take it to the next level. Either way, we are the company for you. We specialize in body composition and we can help you no matter where you are in your fitness journey. So if you want help, you want expert coaching, and you want to finally get to the next level so you can start actually looking like you work out, head over to tailoredcoachingmethod.com and click the big yellow button front and center on the screen, or simply go to the description of this podcast and click that link and apply today. The strategy call is completely free, and it gives us a chance to get to know you, you a chance to get to know us, and by the end of it, we'll decide if it's a good fit and move forward. All right, let's get back to the show. All right, next question. Second question. I feel like I went on a tangent with that one, so Amanda, you're welcome. You got a really long answer on that one, but it's a good question. I think it was really important to provide a lot of context to that. So Caitlin D., from the Discord channel asked, what do you think about approaching a fat loss phase by planning a 3-week deficit, 1 week maintenance, and then repeating that cycle for 2 more times? It seems like it may help with adherence by having planned periods, including breaks. Any other benefits or reasons this approach might be useful? Great question, Caitlin. So there's a few things here. First is that might... So for context, I want people to understand the timeline here, because it might be confusing to know, like, 3 weeks on, 1 week off, 2 times through, what does this mean? So if you're doing 3 total cycles, because you said 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and then 2 more times, repeat that, that would be 12 total weeks with 3 week-long diet breaks throughout the whole period. The first thing that I consider when doing something like this is going to be, A, what is the rate of loss we're after, and how long is it going to take to reach the goal? So for example, that's 12 weeks total. But if we subtract the diet break weeks, which are 3 weeks in that 12-week period, it's only 9 weeks of dieting, which is fine. But we have to understand that, right? Because if the goal is 12 pounds, let's say, and we don't think that we'll be able to lose more than 1 pound per week on average. And I say on average because there's times where somebody might lose 1.5 to 2 pounds a week for the first 3 to 4 weeks. And then once we get like halfway through the diet, we're 6 weeks in or whatever, maybe it slows down a little bit because fatigue is climbing up. Their body's going to present more resistance to the diet because we've been in a deficit for longer. Adaptation, metabolic adaptation starts to kick up. NEAT slows down, things like that. Well, if we consider that, is 9 weeks still long enough to accomplish goal? And if the answer is no, then this approach might not be the best approach because we don't actually have enough time, which would mean if we do think that a diet break system like this would help for adherence, we might have to do 3 more cycles, which would be 4 total cycles of this, because then we would have an extra 3 weeks of deficit weeks, which would put us to 12 weeks. So when I look at this, I go, okay, first and foremost, are these diet breaks going to help adherence? If they are, which research would suggest they do, what is the best way to structure the diet break for this individual specifically in order to increase adherence? If we're looking to increase adherence, we have to understand the individual. We have to talk to the individual. We have to communicate with them. Think about their lifestyle. Think about their training style. Think about what they enjoy. Think about the potential social events coming up. Think about what may steer them off their diet plan in the future. And when we consider all those things, we have to think about what structure of diet break is going to be best. Do we use a full week long diet break? Do we use a 2 week diet? Maybe they have a vacation in the middle of it that is a week and a half. Well, then let's go like 6 weeks of cutting, 2 week diet break while on vacation, and then 6 week mini cut at the end, right? That's going to be 14 weeks in total. That's still 12 weeks dieting. We might be able to get away with that, right? Maybe this person actually doesn't even need a diet break. Maybe that would actually lower their motivation because there's a lot of individuals who are actually more motivated by faster and more repetitive results, and they're going to do better if we don't take a break, if we just get in the zone and we just keep moving forward. There's going to be some individuals who don't need full diet breaks. They need refeeds. So maybe every other week we take 2 days off. So it's like a Saturday, Sunday where they take off and they plan things around it. Or maybe they just need one refeed per week, right? There's a lot of ways to do this. No matter what, we're first going to look at how much weight does this person have to lose? How many weeks is it going to take at least to get there? So basically I go perfect math, perfect scenario, great adherence. It's going to take X amount of weeks to lose weight. Let's say 12 weeks to lose this weight and get to their goal. We're going to plan for 14 weeks. If it's 10 weeks, 12 weeks, right? You always give yourself a 2 week buffer, sometimes even 3, to where you have a couple extra weeks to make sure you're going to get to the goal no matter what. It just gives you wiggle room, right? And then from there we go, is this person going to do better or worse with diet breaks? Like, is it necessary? If it is necessary and they are going to do better, what kind of diet break are we going to use? And then we have to factor that in. So if it's going to take, let's say, 10 weeks, so we map out for 12 because we give ourselves 2 extra weeks of deficit, and we think this person would do best with these 1 week long diet breaks, which I love a 3-1 cycle. I think it works great. I've done it many times. So to answer your question quite directly, yes, I've used this with countless clients, 3 weeks of a pretty steady and aggressive deficit to really see some progress, and then taking a full week off and then repeating that cycle, you know, for 12, 16, 20 weeks. So let's say we do that. Now we go, okay, we need 12 weeks for deficit, and we want at least 3, if not 4, of these diet break weeks. So if we do that, we're going to be at 16 weeks long, okay? So now we lengthen the diet from 12 weeks to 16 weeks, but that's still just 12 weeks deficit, 16 weeks total, including diet breaks. Now, if we get 2 cycles through, we go 3-1, 3-1, and they're crushing it, things are going well, and we're going to be to our goal sooner, great. We'll stop when we're there. We don't need to hit the 16 full weeks, because if we reach our goal at 14 weeks, then we reach our goal. We can start reverse dieting, right? And on the same context, if maybe things are slower, we can always add time to it. So dieting doesn't need to be so written, you know, written in stone on a timeline that you can't adjust along the way. That's going to happen. Shoot, even my contest prep, I've bounced around with shows. We have some personal stuff going on that I can't leave the state for. I have to be present for because my family depends on me. And because of that, I had to adjust. Like, I went from my show being on October 21st to October 14th, now November 4th, 5th. So like, I've bounced around. The timeline has changed. Gives me more time. Great. It's easy. But more important matters came up and I had to be flexible with it. So things are going to happen and that's okay. So yes, like, this would work totally fine. Those are the things that I would look at when I'm considering doing these kind of diet breaks, and when I would implement them in or not. And then we also have to understand too, that if we are not going to lengthen the deficit, because you have two choices, you can either A, go 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and then add a full another month, 4 weeks, another 3 week and 1 week off cycle, really just 3 weeks, because the 1 week off would be the beginning of your reverse diet. Or we need to create a bigger calorie deficit during those 3 week periods. So maybe we don't have the time or capacity. It's just not going to work with our, you know, the period of life we're in, whatever it may be, for us to lengthen the deficit or the total diet phase from 12 weeks to 16 weeks or 20 weeks, whatever. Well, that's okay. Like, let's say we went into a 20% deficit during those 3 week cycles, then we're going to go into a 25% deficit. You just create a bigger deficit and it makes up for it. You have a faster rate of loss. As long as you're not going over 2%, which is pushing it, unless you got a good amount of weight to lose. If you're not losing a ton of weight, I would say 1.5 is the highest I like to see loss per week. Just make sure we're maintaining muscle and hormonal function, but you can always do that as well. Now, any other benefits or reasons this approach might be useful? The number one benefit that we've seen from research on diet breaks and refeeds is going to be the psychological aspect. You minimize diet fatigue, you manage stress better. It helps just keep adherence together. It helps people with social stress and events and stuff like that. You fit in more flexibility. So really, it's just an adherence tool more than anything. There is the research also supports performance improvements. So for example, if you have a diet break for a full week, you're going to increase your carbohydrate intake and calorie intake as total for a whole week, which is going to refill glycogen stores. You're going to essentially fuel your tank. You're going to have better training sessions for the week, maybe week and a half after, and you're potentially going to recover better. So this is where maybe you take your deloads on weeks that are in a deficit and you actually maximize your volume on the weeks you're taking a diet break, because you're literally intaking more calories and carbs. You might as well put those to the test and train hard with them, right? So there are going to be performance benefits. I would say that could potentially lead to some muscle growth in the short term, a better muscle maintenance for sure. And you're going to potentially slow down metabolic adaptation, but you're not reversing anything in just a week. You might push pause on metabolic adaptation, which is great. And it might lessen the amount of metabolic adaptation by the end of the diet. But at the end of the day, like, metabolic adaptation isn't something to be afraid of. It's just part of losing weight. When you lose weight, you're lighter and you need less calories to maintain that. That's part of the goal. So it's something that you just worry about later and you slowly reverse out of to improve metabolic adaptations that occurred and you move on with your life. So there's a couple other benefits, but for the most part, it's adherence, I would say. All right. Next question comes from Instagram. My man, Ryan Tripp, at Ryan Tripp Fitness, asked, when did you start your business and why fitness? I love all your content, all the content you put out, man. Just want to hear more about your story. Thank you. I appreciate that, dude. When I started my business, technically I started my business in 2017, is when I actually started the LLC, Tailored Coaching Method, which at the time was Boom Boom Performance. So if you're an OG listener, if you're somebody who's been following me for a long time, you know me as Boom Boom. Cody Boom Boom McBroom has been my nickname for as long as I can remember. And I have no idea why. There's no significance to it, to be honest with you. It was just some teacher in high school just decided to throw a Boom Boom McBroom on the loudspeakers at a soccer game for my brother, and then I took the name over. I started a blog called Boom Boom Performance back in 2011, I think it was, like 2012. Because I graduated high school at 17 years old in 2010, so I'm 31 years old. And I went from that to living at home with my parents, partying, and just feeling sorry for myself, kind of like eating, drinking, and smoking, partying my way into depression. Like, I was overweight at this point. I had two knee injuries and surgeries at that point, like ACL tear, meniscus tear. I wanted to play soccer, but I wasn't good enough to play at a university. I was hoping to get like a scholarship at a good junior college. Didn't happen because of the injuries. So I had a bum knee. I gained more weight. I was always a chubby kid, but I gained a bunch of weight after that because I was just already lazy. I had never stepped foot in a gym because I didn't go to weights class in school. I actually had weights class twice through high school because you had to have it. Both times just happened to be the times where I actually had surgery. And so I literally couldn't participate in weights class. I just sat in the athletic trainer's room and just hung out with the athletic trainer the whole time, watched videos and stuff like that. It was stupid. And, basically got out of high school, went to a community college, and just started trying to lose weight, man. I was insecure. I hated my body. I hated the way I felt and looked. And this is where, like, you know, like the whole body image, body positivity, I should say, not image, body positivity movement kind of rubbed me wrong for a while, because I think it was giving people permission to stay in a state that was very unhealthy physically, hormonally, metabolically, and even mentally. And they try to ignore it and say that you should be happy with where you're at. And I agree with the statement, you should never talk down to yourself. You should never talk shit to yourself and put yourself down and say nasty, terrible things. And people should not shame you and guilt you and make fun of you for that. And I've been made fun of for that growing up a lot, and it hurts. But if I didn't look myself in the mirror and tell myself, you're overweight, you need to create change, you will be happier, you will live longer, you will prevent more disease, you will be healthier, you will be more likely to be the man that you know you can be and want to be and desire to be, you will be more successful because you'll be enthusiastic, you'll be energetic, you'll have more of an extrovert personality shine through because you're confident. Like, I knew all those things would happen if I got in shape. And so I looked at myself and I told myself that. So I graduated high school. I felt this way. It was probably like a full summer that I didn't do anything about it and kept gaining weight. And then I finally had this like epiphany moment. I was going to community college for business because that's just, you know, what my dad would pay for. Essentially, he was just like, you know what? Go for business. They used to call me Chatty Cathy in school. And he always said, you got the gift of gab, which is why I do a podcast. He's like, you can talk. So you're probably going to be a good salesman. You're going to go to business school just like I did, and I'll get you a job in the oil industry when you're ready, because, you know, he worked in the oil industry. He was like, everybody always needs oil, which is ironic because now we got like this electric movement come through, but still to the point, oil is always going to be, you know, a part of the world. Anyway, so I started doing that, and I hated it. I didn't like school. I never did like school, and I wasn't passionate about what I was learning because I was learning nothing, and there was, you know, this pit in my stomach and this like still this like emotional feeling of just not loving myself and being insecure. And I had a lot of friends that were off at universities out of state, on the other side of the state, playing sports, having fun, being in dorms. And it put me in a really big funk. And so I actually started, I'll never forget, I looked myself in the mirror, I told myself, and so this is more than business, this is my transformation story, this is like my testimony of fitness. I look myself in the mirror after getting out of the shower, and I, and this is crazy. It's so weird to think about. Like, it's not weird because we all do this, but it sounded weird. It sounds weird to say out loud. I just stared at myself naked and was like, "What are you doing, man?" I saw stretch marks come in. I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like how I felt. I didn't like how often I sweated doing things. I didn't like how unathletic I was. I didn't like the lack of capabilities I had physically. And I just owned up to everything, you know, and sometimes admitting your pain and looking your pain straight in the eye is actually the best way to create a positive transformation. So the only way for me to seek a path towards positivity and betterment was actually to look myself dead in the face, look my body up and down and admit you are not in a good spot. It's time to create change. And so I started making small changes, you know, eating like Special K or Honey Nut Cheerios instead of Fruit Loops, having 1% or non-fat milk instead of 2%. I started having Diet Pop instead of regular pop. I started losing a little bit of weight. Then I started going to the gym and I started doing random stuff. And it was when I was in the gym at the community college that a guy named Tim Vagan came up to me, who had worked with so many athletes from Deion Sanders to Michael Phelps to a bunch of other Olympic swimmers. He wasn't like Michael Phelps' trainer, but he worked alongside the team. He worked with a lot of other Olympic swimmers because he was a big swimming coach in the Olympics. And he worked with a lot of football players in the college because he was a strength conditioning coach, I believe in Tampa, in Florida somewhere. And at the time, the training world was ran by all these like functional training specialists when that movement was really coming about. Michael Boyle, Dan John, Greg Cook, Alan Cosgrove, Charlie Weingroff, he knew all these people. He was friends with them all. So we had like, I basically, this guy who comes in the gym tells me that he could teach me a thing or two. I ignore him because I was an ignorant 18-year-old, but he was like, all right, well, if you change your mind, like, cause I was doing something stupid. I can't remember what it was in the gym. And he just said like, oh, I could help you with that a little bit if you want, as he was walking by. And I ignored him. And then he told me what room he was in. So eventually, like, I was back in class and I didn't like what my teacher had said. And he basically said he had never ran a business, which I understand. You go to college for business and you become a business professor. I guess you don't. I don't know. Maybe you don't. Maybe you do. I didn't like the fact that he never ran a business. And when I asked him, what businesses have you ran? Because it was in business 101. He said, none. I just got up and left because I thought it was weird. didn't resonate with me. And on my way back to my car, I saw the class that the fitness thing was in. I went in there and I just fell in love with what he was teaching. So I started skipping my classes to go to his. And then eventually I tried to ask my parents to, you know, my dad, because my dad was the one paying for school, to change my degree. And he said no, which I totally understand at this point of life, because I'm mature now and I was still overweight. I wasn't really, it was like a month into, I love fitness, I'm going to be a trainer. Change my degree for me, dad, and pay for it. And he said no. So I went and forged his signature because I had gotten good at that in junior high and high school from getting in trouble. And the rest is history, man. I just started pursuing that. I met a lot of people, got an internship, became a trainer. And I started a blog called Boom Boom Performance, where I was just writing content because Instagram wasn't a thing yet. Podcasting wasn't a thing yet, really. And so I was a trainer for 6.5 years. Towards the tail end of that, I started a podcast called Mind vs. Muscle with Theo Bowie, who's one of my best friends to this day. Was a fellow trainer. He was actually a student at the school who I ended up getting an internship with after I finished mine and became a trainer. I got him an internship, started training him, and then he became a trainer there as well. Became my best friend. We started a podcast, Mind vs. Muscle, which later on became the Boom Boom Performance podcast because I took it over, which later on became Tailored Life podcast, which you're listening to now. And Boom Boom Performance was a blog. And then I started, you know, wanting to learn how to build an online business. I started LLC in 2017 when I left the gym to train people online because I found out I was going to have a daughter. And I was like, this is my time. I gave up 100% of my client roster. So I went from making a good paycheck as a full-time trainer to making nothing, literally, while my wife was pregnant, while our house and mortgage was under her name, while she was on maternity leave. And I told her she was never going to go back, but I made it happen and she never went back to work. And I built the company and eventually started building a team. I changed it to Tailored Coaching Method because Boom Boom Performance made zero sense for what we do. It was named, that was my nickname, right? And Tailored Coaching Method is so much more than me. Tailored Coaching Method is this podcast. It's you, the listener. It's our clients. It's our message. It's our mission. It's our philosophy. It's our method of coaching. It's what we believe in, what we stand for, what we're after, what the change we're trying to create in the world. And so I wanted to create something that represented that. And everything we do is individualized to the person. And so Tailored Coaching Method just clicked. It made sense. It sounded really cool. I always thought Chuck Taylors were dope. I've worn them my whole life. Loved Wiz Khalifa growing up. So Taylor Gang was really cool to me. I just thought Tailored sounded so sick. So, and it made sense. So we changed it to that. And the rest is history, man. So I started my business technically in 2017. It's 2023 now. So we're going to hit 6 years of operations in October, which is great. The first full year was just me solo. And then I started building a team slowly but surely. And we're very, very particular with who we bring on and the standard we hold because our coaches are experts. And I'm not just saying that, like they literally have more credentials and certifications and degrees than most people who run full large companies do. And we do that on purpose. So, you know, in 6 years is actually still a baby in business, which is crazy. But to me, it's been slow because I just move a million miles an hour. And the reason fitness is because it changed my life, man. Like it got me out of some stories I won't get into today, but it got me out of a bad place, mentally, emotionally, physically. It got me out of bad environments that could have sent me down the really bad path. It just completely changed my life. It changed the way I operate. And it led to so many other things. It led to my wife. It led to falling in love with content creation. It led me to, the lessons I learned. It led me to God. Honestly, it led me to so many aspects of life that have nothing to do with fitness. And it's all because of fitness. And so it's been my mission to help people change their lives in every way, shape, and form, starting with fitness and nutrition, right? Like that's the vehicle. So that's the story, man. We'll get to one more question. And this one is kind of similar on the nutrition coaching aspect. And that's from @Manny_J_Diaz. Best advice for standing out in the industry as a newer online coach. So there's a really cool quote I heard from Alex Ramosi, and it was like, it was something along the lines of essentially, you know, a lot of times new coaches might have insecurities because they don't have any skin in the game, right? You don't have a ton of experience. You don't have a ton of testimonials. You don't have a ton of results. You don't have a bunch to back you up. Like somebody like myself, who has thousands of testimonials, thousands of clients. I have a whole team of coaches. We have science. We have credentials, certifications. We have money. We have everything now because we've built this company over time. Once upon a time, I didn't have any of that. right? And you listening might not have any of that yet. And so some people think of that as a disadvantage. When you're in the beginning and you don't have skin in the game, you look at it as a disadvantage because you don't have all these things to back you up, but you also have nothing to lose, which is one of the biggest advantages ever. Again, Alex Ramosi said, and I love that quote because it was like, man, that's such a good point. If you're a new coach, a new person in blank industry, go get it. You have nothing to lose. That's actually one of the most dangerous positions to be in for your competitors because you're like, screw it. I got nothing to lose. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to crush this. I'm going to do everything I can to be the best coach ever because what do I have to lose? I don't care if people judge me. I don't care if people don't see me. I don't care if people laugh at me. I don't care. I'm going to go all in. And the truth of the matter is, if you're doing good work, if you're doing helpful things, if you're creating helpful content, if you're improving people's lives in general, there's nothing bad that comes out of it, right? So at the end of the day, like my best advice for standing out in the industry as a newer online coach, honestly, is going to be, it's so crazy that this is the advice I have to give you, but this is today's world. My advice is work harder than your competition or the people you see, provide more value and exceed the expectations that your clients pay for, and be more accessible. The reality of today's industry with nutrition coach, right? The nutrition coaching space is more automated than ever. Coaches are on this high horse where they feel like they have like, you know, nobody can access them. Nobody can talk to them. Like, screw that. You're a coach and somebody's paying you. You should be there for them whenever you can be, as often as you can be. Be accessible, right? Be reachable. Deliver more value. Charge down here. Provide up here. Charge down here, provide value up here, right? And honestly, you should do that for as long as you can, even beyond being a new coach. If you can provide more value than they expect, which is something we still stand by and do all the time, we exceed expectations, you're going to make it as a coach. You're going to stand out more than a coach because people are going to talk about you. You're providing more value, right? So be accessible, provide more value than you're charging for in any way, shape, or form that you can. Go into it with a I have nothing to lose mentality and just work harder than everybody around you. You do those three things, man, you're going to crush it. And of course, like the obvious is like get results. You know, if you can't get somebody results, figure out how to get them results. If you're struggling to get your clients to adhere, go study behavior change, client adherence, motivational interviewing, communication, connection. If you're struggling because you don't know how to adjust somebody's macros, go study macros, go study periodization, go study fat loss, nutrition, like go get certified, go do things that actually matter. Continue education. I think it's crazy. So many people stop education. Almost everybody on my staff is a sports nutritionist. And if you knew what you have to do in order to become a credentialed sports nutritionist, it's crazy. I've done it. We've all done it, right? I've done multiple year-long nutritionist courses, year-long, each one. At different times, on top of the ones that are 3 to 6 months. Like, we don't stop getting educated. So like, do the things that you know the best companies and the best coaches in the industry do, of course, because that's going to put you up to their standard, and then be more accessible. Don't automate stuff. Like, I think that's like, I used to get in arguments with companies that we'd hire on the business front, because they'd be like, you got to automate stuff. You're too big of a company to be worrying about this. I'm like, no, I'll pay more money and pay somebody, a human, to do this with me or for me, or do this other thing so that I can do it, because human to human connection matters to me and it matters to the people we work with. We don't automate shit like that, right? We want to connect. We want to be accessible. What do I have to do to delegate other stuff so I can be more accessible to my clients, right? That stuff matters. So how do you stand out? Be accessible, provide more value than you're giving or that you charge for, like charge down here and then exceed the value that they expect, exceed the value that you sell, like tell them this, give them that kind of thing. Work harder than the competition, man, you'll crush it. That's like, I mean, it really is that simple. And it's crazy that I even have to, you know, say those simple things because it should be a obvious thing. You should always be accessible or as accessible as you can be. Obviously, as you get busy, you're going to be a little bit less accessible. And, you know, I don't expect people to be texting their clients while they're eating dinner with their family, of course, but you should always, like, those are like givens to me. Exceed expectations, work hard, be accessible, constantly educate yourself and actually get results, right? I mean, really, like think about it. For any coach listening, like those are non-negotiables. Those are obvious things. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people in the industry who are in it for money and they don't do those things. And those people don't last. I promise you that. So All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up there. Really, really good Q&A. I'm glad we did that. I haven't done a Q&A in a little bit, I feel like, and those are always the ones that get me the most fired up. So thank you for your questions. If you have questions for the podcast, obviously follow me on Instagram at Cody McBroom because I post it on my story at times. Jump in the Discord channel because they get first dibs. There's a link for that in the description. There's also a Q&A form that lives in the description of this podcast, as well as my Instagram bio. It's at the bottom of my like link menu thing, like kind of like my Linktree, but it's not Linktree. It's my own shit. But save that page, open in your browser and just keep it there or whatever. But like save the link, do something like that so you can ask questions. When something pops up in your head, ask us a question. If you have topics that you'd like us to cover, if you have guests that you'd like us me to get on, drop those in there too. Regardless, I appreciate you guys listening so much more than you know. Thank you so much for helping me grow this podcast. Our mission and goal is to reach more people and change more lives. So please leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you enjoyed this, make sure that you send this to a friend so they can benefit from it as well. And as always, I appreciate you guys listening and I will catch you next time.